The very basic core of a man's living spirit is his passion for adventure. Christopher McCandless.
That year, there was more snow in the Sierras in July than these last 2 years in May. And what that forced us to do was to get in there later, which then meant that Northern California was going to be inundated with fires. And there was a big fire there, and then a big fire in Oregon, and those two fires connected. So I was in my tent. I had just gotten a cookie from a Jehovah's Witness, and then a forest ranger knocked on my tent and said, "You gotta be out of here by 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. The fire's about 50 miles behind you." And then we got stranded and stuck in Trout River for 3 days until the fire, they could handle it. Yeah, that was a very tough year. I don't think many people finished.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail, dirtbags and hiker trash. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right, let's get to this week's guest. Well, as you know, constant listener, we have had quite a few guests on the podcast who have rightfully fit into the category of badass. We have talked to some people out there who have done some truly incredible things in the outdoor arena. This week, though, we may be kicking that up a notch. Yes, this week we are talking to a thru-hiker who has some pretty big notches on his belt. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Cheswick. How's it going, Cheswick?
Going pretty good, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Cheswick, is that the name that appears on your paycheck and driver's license?
No, that's my trail name.
That's your trail name? Okay.
Yeah, because, Charlie Cheswick from One Flew Over of the Cuckoo's Nest, and I smoke a half a pack of cigarettes a day. So if I don't have them on trail, I'm not a happy camper.
I see. Which one was Charlie Cheswick in One Flew Over?
He was the one that freaked out because Nurse Ratchet wouldn't give him his cigarettes and they gave him electroshock therapy. He was like Jack Nicholson's right-hand man in the movie.
Got it. Any other similarities between you and Cheswick besides the cigarettes?
No, that's it.
Never had electroshock therapy?
No, I have not.
Not yet anyway. Okay.
Not yet anyway, but we're getting there, man.
All right. Hey, Cheswick, have you had a chance to listen to the podcast before?
No, I just got Zoom downloaded about 5 minutes ago.
Okay. All right. So yeah. You're coming in cold. I want to point out a segment that we do towards the end of each episode. It is called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. That's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better.
All right.
So don't be surprised when we get there. You can drop trail wisdom throughout the episode, but you will be on the hook for that one at the end.
Okay.
All right. And hey, where are you calling in from? You're on a Nokia phone. I see some nice cupboards in the background. It's nice and quiet where you are.
Yeah, I live in the White Mountains up in New Hampshire. I'm like 10 minutes from Mount Washington.
Okay. So we have a 3-hour time difference. It's after 9 o'clock in the evening where you are. You can be able to stay with me the whole time?
Yeah. I think if I can do the Great Western Loop in 197 days, I could probably stay awake for a podcast for an hour or so.
Attaboy. I like the effort. All right.
The Must Bring Gear Review.
Hey, Cheswick. Another feature we've been doing this season is the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Six Moon Designs. And here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day, week, month hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Cheswick, when you're out there on the Great Western Loop, what do you have to have? What is your must-bring piece of gear out there?
Leuco tape. Mm. And Body Glide. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and why those two items? Why are they so important for you?
Oh, because if you have blisters, man, you're not going to want to hike. So I do everything I can to avoid that. Happy feet, happy hiker, you know?
That's right. Foot care is paramount.
Sure.
Excellent choice. Now, we like to talk gear here on the podcast. And to help us talk about gear,
it's the hiking pole.
We have the hiking pole. And you would think, you know, just as we're talking about hiking, hiking pole would be the thing you carry in your hands out there when you're on the trail. But no, this is pole, P-O-L-L. This is a 7-question survey that I'm going to ask you. Okay. That's going to help me give you a score on the sanity scale from 1 to 100, with okay. 1 being completely insane and 100 being completely sane. Now, as a as someone who has done the Great Western Loop, there's an automatic 30-point deduction from your highest score. The highest score you could possibly get now is 70, because I think that says something about your state of mind.
All right.
If I were to ask your friends or fellow hiker trash out there, you know, where would you score Cheswick on the sanity scale from 1 to 100? Where do you think they put you?
I guess it depends on who you ask. My buddy Duster will say a 1. And my buddy No One would say a 1. But everyone else would probably say a 30.
What a great trail name. No One.
No One, yeah.
How about your family? What would your family say?
My dad was going to take a life insurance policy out on me, which I thought was a good move. I don't know if he ever did, but I was on the Arizona Trail, so I had like, I don't know, a week left of hiking. And I was on the phone with my dad and my brother, and they were still telling me to get a real job. So that's kind of where they're at with it. My grandmother's big supporter, and my mother sends all of my resupply packages. So whether she supports it or not, she doesn't really have a choice. So yeah, a lot of people are, family are excited, and other ones think that I need to get a real job. So it's kind of split 50-50.
Nice. You got the women folk on your side in your family.
Yes. Okay. Very lucky to have them.
All right. So these 7 questions, these are all hiking related questions. You can see which side you fall on each of these issues. And it's best when you give your answer also to give explanation, because that helps me with my scoring.
All right.
All right. This is completely subjective. There is no rationale as to how I score this. It just depends on how I feel. I'm in a pretty good mood tonight. So we'll see how it goes.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right. First question, trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles. The reason being, it's good to have that balance, and some of the steep stuff going down is tough on the knees. So I like to be able to push my trekking poles as I walk downhill. And I go a lot faster when I have them in my hands. I mean, I've been, you know, skiing downhill since I was 5. So 32 years, and I'm just used to having poles. So it just makes sense.
Okay. Has there ever been an instance where a trekking pole really saved your bacon?
Probably more times than I can count. This particular time in Oregon and Washington, there was just so much snowpack. We needed to have something. And if we didn't, it would have just been this brutal slipping and sliding slog for, you know, 1,000 miles. So, yeah, I'm a Black Diamond Ergo trekking pole. I don't use carbon fiber because last year I broke 6 of them. And I don't even, like, I don't need a trekking pole to be lightweight. I need it to not snap in half. So, yeah, the Black Diamond Ergo is the one that I use. And they don't sponsor me. I'm just saying that's just the one particular trekking pole that I choose.
Right there. Piece of trail wisdom. That's a free one, listeners. He just handed that out without any charge. All right. Question number 2. What's on your feet, boots or trail runners?
Trail runners. I have to look for them now because they don't make them. The Ultra Temp 2 is the shoe that I use when I do these.
And why the Temp 2, not the Lone Peak?
I like that they're a little bit more durable on the exterior part, and they're a little bit more cushioned. And yeah, I don't know. I've got a pair of Lone Peaks, just not as big of a fan. I've got seven pairs of Lone Peaks I'm looking at right now. I send them back sometimes when they're all beat up and ripped up just because I want to keep them. But yeah, I'm a Timp 2 guy.
You going to have those bronzed and put on the wall?
I was thinking about it. I just was like, how do I get shoes bronzed? So I have to do a little research.
Nice. You can put them next to your bronzed baby shoes. I mean, it'd be a nice matching set right there.
Yeah, I don't even know if I have that.
All right. Question number three. When it comes to shelters out there, are you a tent guy, tarp, hammock, bivy, or hey, let's just do some cowboy camping?
I'm a tent guy and a cowboy camp guy. I probably, if I'm in the desert most of the time, cowboying. There's just a couple of, like, Oregon state bird is the mosquito, so that's not a good place to cowboy camp. And then down like in the Everglades, you would prefer to have a hammock, but the straps are 6 pounds or whatever. So when I was down there, I was just using a tent. But if you're not in your tent by the time the sun goes down, the mosquitoes down there are pretty bad too. But I always thought that the mosquitoes in the Everglades would be the worst I'd ever encountered until I got to Oregon last June through the Three Sisters Wilderness, and it was beyond. God, I still have nightmares about that section.
Now, was it just the intensity of them, so many of them, or was it the size of them?
It was both, but, even in the middle of the day, 90-degree heat, they're still completely swarming you. So there was, I think, one day where I pulled, I think it was like 40, I think I did like a 41-mile day, but I started late. I started at 8:30. So to pull a 41, that means that I didn't stop because I couldn't. I only stopped to take a piss. But other than that, man, like, it was that brutal, just nonstop all day.
The mosquitoes helped you with your distance then. That's good. That's good. And in Florida, I mean, that tent, that's a real big protection against the gators out there as well, right?
Well, I mean, I do a lot of night hiking in the Everglades, so it's weird to, like, have the headlamp going and you just see these beady little eyes looking at you from the right, and then you just see something just water moccasin just cruise ahead of you. But those golden orb spiders, those things cast these massive webs across the trail. And I remember one day I was just taking, that's another reason why I keep the trekking pole. And I was just whacking those webs all morning, dude. And those things are a big spider. I mean, and they're yellow and black striped. And I hate spiders. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, you've just given me three more reasons not to go to Florida, and do any kind of night hiking. The eyes, the water moccasin, the spiders, forget about it, man. That's enough for me.
And now they're talking about big pythons down there, too.
Oh, yeah, those things are huge.
Yeah, so I didn't do any research before I did that hike, and I think there's a good reason for that. I didn't want to freak myself out.
It was probably for the best. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, question number four. When it comes to your sleep system, are you a sleeping bag guy or a quilt guy?
Sleeping bag. Yeah, definitely. I did a quilt last year and I froze in the Sierras in like a 3-day snowstorm. So I'll trade 3 more ounces for warmth. That definitely makes a lot of sense.
And are you down or synthetic?
Synthetic.
Really?
Maybe. I don't even know. Okay. I'm not sure. I just go for weight and speed, so I don't look too much into gear stuff.
Okay. Well, this next question is going to be interesting then, because this is a dangerous question. Huge possible point deduction. All right. Okay. So be careful here. I'm friendly tonight. I want to make sure that you're doing all right. When it comes to food, are you a stove guy, cold soak, or stoveless?
Cold soak.
Oh.
Yeah. Actually, here's my cold soak jar. I was just looking at it. It's an old gelato.
Uh-huh.
I got this in Dubois, Wyoming, actually. But I was at a hotel in Safford, Arizona, and I microwaved something and melted it in half.
Now, Cheswick, I have to tell you, I gave cold soaking a shot. I tried.
Really?
But I just, after a few days, my buddies are in camp and they're eating nice hot food at the end of a long day, and I just gave in.
Oh.
I just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, you're just you're not doing enough miles. Because if you get that hungry, man, you don't care if it's hot, cold, warm, whatever, as long as you just got something to put in your mouth. So, yeah, you gotta get into the pyramid of pain. You start doing the pyramid of pain, and then you'll for sure not really care about cold soaking. So it's a 20, a 30, a 40, a 30, and a 20.
Okay, now we need to explore that a little bit. We're going to take a little detour from the hiking pole to explore the pyramid of pain. Take us through that.
So it'd be a 20-mile day, followed by a 30-mile day, followed by a 40, then a 30, and then a 20, which I used to think was those numbers were unattainable. But now if I was to do the pyramid of pain, I would be pretty upset with myself. You can't do the pyramid of pain and do the Great Western Loop. So if you think a 20, 30, 40, 30, 20 is hard, you probably should just stay on like an Appalachian Trail or an Arizona Trail.
Wow. So in the span of, let's see, I'm doing some quick math here. 140 miles in 5 days is what the Pyramid of Pain comes out to be.
Yeah. So my goal was always for the loop was 200 miles every 5 days. So that's what I plan my food for was every 5 days, 200 miles. So every day was 3,500 to 4,000 calories.
Okay. But, and it didn't matter if those calories were hot or cold.
No, I was buying, people think, you're maybe I'm a vegan or really, health conscious. And I am when I'm home, but when I'm out there, I just need calorie dense things. So, peanut butter is 190 calories per 2 tablespoons. But if you do the Peter Pan peanut butter, it's 200 calories per 2 tablespoons. And yeah, I was eating snowballs and Twinkies and cheese doodles. I mean, whatever you get your hands on. Because a lot of the time, resupplying, if I wanted to stay remotely close to the trail, I'd just have to resupply at convenience stores. And the American convenience store isn't known for their nutritional content.
They don't have a vegan section in the American convenience store.
They don't have a vegan section. They don't even have like a healthy section. It's like Rockstar energy drinks, taquitos, and Doritos.
Pick your Edo. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, hey Cheswick, your score took a big hit right there. We're gonna continue on. You're just gonna keep going forward here.
Right.
Question number six: is life better above or below the tree line?
I mean, the views are better above, but if I'm gonna have to live, I'd like to be a little below it. I've gotten in some pretty bad situations above tree line. But then again, it depends on the elevation. New Mexico, you could be at 10,000 feet and you're still surrounded by trees. But here, Mount Washington, you're at 6,000 feet and you're completely exposed. So,
hey, Cheswick, yeah. you know what's below the tree line?
What's that?
Golden orb spiders, water moccasins, and alligators. You don't deal with that stuff above the tree line, buddy.
I know, dude. But that's the funniest thing about the Florida Trail is the highest point is a hill.
Yeah,
and when I say that, it's literally like...
It's like 50 feet, right?
No, I don't even think it's that. I think it's like 20 something. You're just walking around like this white sandy path, and then all of a sudden you just like go up a little bit of a hill, and there's just a plaque that says highest point in Florida. All right.
Did you complain on that uphill?
Not on that one.
All right. Yeah. Question number seven. What's more, I think I already know the answer to this one, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's more important, pack weight or luxury items?
Oh, pack weight. Well, I guess, no, I guess it depends on what you're doing. You know, if you're going to do the Appalachian Trail in 6 months, make sure you got the luxury stuff. But if you're trying to push yourself and challenge yourself and do a distance in a certain amount of time, you don't have room for luxury items.
Hey, what was your base weight on the Great Western Loop?
Like 10 or 11. Okay. Because electronics were heavy, yeah. You know. I think that's, at this point, you know, between all of the gear, the packs, you know, I don't think a tent's going to be able to get much lighter. I don't think a sleeping bag's going to be able to get much lighter, or a backpack. But I think there's going to be a point where the main difference moving forward for through hiking is going to be just electronics.
Yeah.
You know, like a phone that won't have to be charged for a month, a power bank that weighs, you know, 3 ounces instead of a pound. Right. Although I think those are the things that are going to change. But
yeah. Leave the boombox from the 80s home. that really adds on to the weight. That really makes a big impact on the base weight.
That's pretty heavy. This Nokia, we were talking about my phone earlier. I went through three phones on the loop. And this is the last one that I bought.
Now, Cheswick, I have to confess that when you first popped up on Zoom and it I just saw you in the waiting room and it said, you know, your name was Nokia G300. I'm thinking, when I think of Nokia, I'm thinking like a flip phone. I'm like, oh, this is going to be audio only. I'm not even gonna see what this guy looks like because he's dealing with a flip phone.
It was the only 5G cell phone that the Walmart outs in Leavenworth, Washington had. So I just had to buy it. It wasn't what I wanted, but it seems to be doing the trick.
Okay. Well, Cheswick, you've answered all seven questions. It's time for me to take your answers and put them through the John Freaking Muirpod algorithm. I have a little math to do, so bear with me.
All right.
I've got to carry the three. We're going to divide by pi. Going to multiply that by √3, and we're going to adjust for the air pressure at the height of the Florida Trail at 20 feet. And I come up with a score of 27, solid 27.
All right. Thank you.
It's a badge of honor right there. Now that can, as we go through the interview, that score could adjust up or could adjust down. I'm thinking it might go down a little bit at the end. So we'll see.
All right.
And this is entertaining. If you're watching us on YouTube, he's on the move. Cheswick is on the move with his Nokia.
Cheswick's on the move with my Nokia.
Just don't go into the bathroom, please.
Oh, yeah, cool. Told you I'm slightly dehydrated, so I'm just need to stay on the water game.
All right. As you are tracking down some hydration, we're gonna slow down. We're going to back up a little bit before we get too far down the trail. Let's hear about your background, where you grew up, what kinds of activities were you involved in as a kid, and how in the heck did you get involved in the thru-hiking cult?
Wow, that's a big question. I was an athlete growing up, soccer, and I was a fast runner. And where I live is an Appalachian Trail town, Gorham, New Hampshire. So I've grown up just seeing all of these weird, hairy, skinny hikers coming through town. And it just happened to be at a point where I didn't know what I wanted to do. And it was December, and you can't do the Appalachian Trail in December. I mean, I guess you could, but you're not going to like it. And, so I thought, well, where else can I start hiking in December? And I came across the Florida Trail. And then I wondered if you could link the Florida Trail and the Appalachian Trail. And then I came across Eastern Continental Trail. So That was my first thru hike, was the ECT. That was back in 2015. So I started New Year's Eve from Miami, and I finished on October 24th of that year. So I was on the trail for 10 and a half months.
Okay, so growing up Appalachian Trail adjacent, you kind of had an awareness that thru hiking was a thing. You had seen these guys out there, and you kind of put pieces together and said, hey, there's such a thing as thru hiking.
Yeah, but, you know, I didn't feel the thru hiking culture whatsoever from when I started in Miami to when I got to the Appalachian Trail. So I was on the trail for four months. And then when I walked into Springer Mountain, I had no idea about thru hiking culture. I just kind of came around a turn, and there's, you know, 50 people all about to do this thing. And I thought, oh, so it's like a thing. People do this. But I'd been on the trail for 1800 miles up to that point. I just thought walking through the Everglades and just walking roads and just doing this thing was not a normal activity. But yeah, it was exciting to get to Springer and to see all these people that were all trying to attempt this very difficult challenge. And, you know, when you meet them all at the first day, they're all warm and they're all dry and they don't have any issues yet. And I had blisters covering my feet and I was soaking wet and my tent was broken. And I'm thinking, yeah, just wait, because everyone's going to get to Katahdin from there. But, you know, once the shit hits the fan, you find out who you really are. And that's probably why I think only, what is it, 25% of Appalachian Trail people finish?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Now, Cheswick, had you had any backpacking experience before you decided to take on the ECT?
Yeah, I did the Mount Everest Base Camp trek back in 2008. Mm-hmm. When I went with Mountain Madness. So that was Scott, whatever, he died in 96 and into thin air. But that was, you know, all catered and everything. But, you know, it's still two and a half weeks of hiking through the Himalayas. So mm-hmm. you learn how you're going to deal with altitude and, you know, certain things that, if you were to do anything longer, you would realize that, you know, to do, you know, fast pace, like you don't use hiking boots. You don't use any external frame packs anymore. There's a lot of things right. that even in 2 weeks of hiking, you find out. But then the other thing is, how do you deal with altitude? Because you fly into Lukla, which is considered the most dangerous airport in the world. It's like a landing strip off of a cliff, but I had no idea about it until I could literally look through the cockpit, and I guess the pilot was probably like 18 or 19, and you just look through the cockpit and you just see this airstrip off of a cliff, and you're like, oh, so that's where we're landing, oh, so that's where we're going to be taken off. And it was crazy, but you land there and that's 9,000 feet and you go up to 17.5 at base camp. So you And everyone was taking Diamox, which helps, I think it helps oxygenate your blood. But I didn't have to take it because I was young. Everyone else was old. Everyone else was like in their 40s and 50s and 60s, all well-to-do career people. And I'm like this 22-year-old bartender just ripping cigarettes up through to the base camp. But I realized I'm pretty good at altitude. Believe it or not. I don't know how that is, but yeah.
All right, Cheswick, I'm going to make an observation, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
So sounds like similar to not doing a whole lot of research before hitting Florida. Sounds like you didn't do, did you do a lot of research going to base camp? I'm sensing a pattern here.
Well, that's, you know, all taken care of and paid for. You know, you got an itinerary. They have the places you're going to stay. They have the food that you're going to eat. They've got your porters. They've got your Sherpas. So for me on that one, it was just like, well, I paid $4,000 or $5,000 to do it. Let them handle all the logistics. I'm just going to walk. So that approach was actually one of the better moves I've done.
Now, let's go back to the Eastern Continental Trail. You were the 16th person to complete it.
Yeah, I guess so.
And this was your first major through hike. Right, where you're carrying everything, where you're carrying everything on your back. You take 1,800 miles before the AT, and you add on the 2,200 miles of the AT. And there's a northern portion to it that goes beyond the AT, correct?
Yeah, I found out when I was on top of Katahdin that I was the 16th person, but I still had 700 miles to go. So you go off the top of Katahdin, and you do the Knife's Edge, and then you got to get into Canada. So I had to sneak in there.
You crossed the border, huh?
Yeah, Mars Hill, Maine. Went through a cabbage patch and snuck in at night.
So that's 4,700 miles for your first through hike.
48.
I'm sorry, I stand corrected. 4,800 miles. And that that seems completely sane.
I mean, it just worked out with timing. You know, I decided to start in December or the end of the year. And the only place I could do that was in Florida. It just happened to be that you could connect Florida to the Alabama Roadwalk, to the Georgia Pinhoti, Alabama Pinhoti, and 60 miles to the Benton Mackay. And then the International Appalachian Trail beyond the Appalachian Trail. So, yeah, it was more of just like, it just made sense given the situation that I was in my life.
You're like the Forrest Gump of through hiking. I just keep walking. I feel like walking.
Yeah, but there was a point where I was like kind of tired. Think I'll go home now.
All right. Hey, we're going to get into some of the specifics on the Everest Base Camp journey, your ECT, and we certainly have to hear about the PCT and the Great Western Loop. So all that is coming in the second segment. Let's take a listen to our sponsors, and we'll meet you after the break. Stay tuned. Right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. This episode is sponsored by Jolly Gear. Are you tired of compromising between the ventilation of a button-down and the full protection of a sun hoodie? With the Triple Crown button-down, you can have the best of both. Plus, their fun standout patterns will have you the talk of the trail. Visit them at jollygear.com. Through hiker owned, Jolly Gear, where fun meets functional.
And welcome back. We're talking to Cheswick, aka the Forrest Gump of through hiking. That's his unofficial name that I just given him on the podcast. We heard a little bit about some of his early experiences. Any real memorable events jump out at you from the Everest Base Camp other than that that sudden realization about where you have to land the plane?
Yeah. My roommate for the hike was this guy named Martin. And he was a nuclear engineer from London. And he had the worst body odor He like never used any deodorant, and we've been hiking for like 3 weeks up there. I'm like, dude, you're trying to hint, you're trying to get him to go, oh yeah, maybe I should use some deodorant. Anyway, it got so bad I literally had to take toothpaste and stick it up my nose because that was a better option than having to spend any more time in that room with that guy.
I think
That was memorable.
that's what homicide detectives do at murder scenes that
Yes, right.
have been, a couple of weeks old. I mean, that's brutal.
Yeah, they do it in Silence of the Lambs, actually.
Yeah. Did he ever take the hint?
No,
He
never
never
did.
turned to you and said, "Hey, roomie, what is this weird American tradition of putting toothpaste in your nose?"
Oh, dude, this was in the middle of the night. Like, I just couldn't take it anymore. So he didn't actually see me doing
Well, you're too subtle then. You need to be a little more obvious.
Yeah. He got the worst altitude sickness. He couldn't even make it to base camp. He had to stop at 15, 15, 9. Yeah, he never even made it to base camp, and he paid to go there.
Ouch. Now, you said base camp is at 17,000 feet?
Yeah, something like that. 17, 17, 5.
Is that the highest you've ever been?
No, we climbed Kalapatar, which was across from base camp. It's like another 1,000 or something.
Okay, and what
That's the
is it trying
highest.
to go uphill at 18,000 feet?
It feel like you're hungover. You're lethargic. You don't have an appetite. You just have a headache. So I'd read a lot of high altitude mountaineering books, Ed Viesters and Chris Bonington, a lot of these guys, and they talk about when you're up there, you need to force yourself to drink water, you need to force yourself to eat. And when you get to camp, don't just sit there and fall asleep. Stay active at that altitude, and that's going to get your body used to performing at that height. So I never forgot that. So I was always the last person out of camp, but I was always the first person into camp because they were just going, just waking up and just wanting to send it. But I would just force myself to eat and drink throughout the course of the day until I could pick up my pace, and I'd always be the first into camp. That's because I read about that stuff before. So I did do that kind of research. I didn't research the actual trip that I was going to do. I just researched what you needed to do to perform at that altitude.
And hey, you made it, and Martin did it. So, I mean, you did something right.
Yeah. But I think Martin's got a pretty stacked bank account, so he's got me on that one.
There's always trade-offs, right? Okay.
Sure.
Now, how about the Eastern Continental Trail? Was the southern part, the middle part, or the northern part? What was your favorite there, or was it just kind of it's hard to tell.
I mean, the White Mount, like when you, excuse me, it was a weird feeling. Like when I got to Vermont, that's when I felt like I was on the Appalachian Trail. The smell of the pine, the look of it, like it felt like Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. That was like the real deal Appalachian Trail. Pennsyltucky is tough just because it's so rocky. And there's so many people initially, the trail gets pretty beat up. And so, yeah, I personally didn't feel like I was on the AT probably until I got to the Delaware Water Gap. But then it really felt like I was there. I was with no one in Vermont, actually. We got there and,
Were you with the thru hiker named No One, or were you with No One?
I was with the thru hiker named No One.
Okay. All right. Just clarifying.
Yeah. Well, I got Lyme's disease in New York. And then I went to a 4th of July party. And the next day, we went skydiving. And I had taken two hits of acid to go skydiving with. So that was the highlight of that hike. for sure.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty wild 2 or 3 days right there.
Yeah, it was incredible. And then actually, I didn't leave there for another 7 because I had Lyme's disease.
All right, and what year was the Eastern Continental Trail?
Was 2015. I was 29 at the time.
Just
So
a young, just a young
I
pup.
had, yeah, I had 0 trail miles when I started New Year's Eve from Miami or west of Miami. But now I got, what, 18,200, I think.
Okay, and
It's a lot of walking.
what have been the big changes on trails or in the gear that you've seen since you started out on that journey?
The packs. I think when I started that, everyone was all about hyper expensive mountain gear. And now there's a lot of other companies that are making stuff that is lighter, it's more efficient. Like one of my main sponsors is Nashville Pack, and I was on the phone with them today trying to develop a pack for another hike that I'm going to do. And they got it figured out, man. But I'm not a waist belt guy. I don't like waist belts because I'm thin anyway. And, I don't have hips. So a waist belt doesn't really help me. But I love the breathability of not having a waist belt. So for this last hike, I had a 92-mile waterless stretch the first attempt. And then I changed the route in the Mojave and I did a 74. And so that was the only time that I used a waist belt. But other than that, I don't. Yeah, I
Right. And
think the packs for
so
sure.
typically what is the what type of pack do you use then if you don't have a waist belt?
I use a Nashville Cutaway, which is their
Cutaway.
flagship pack. But the one they developed is has the waist belt, and that is a little bit bigger, and that's called the Fretless. And so if people like waist belts packs, go with that one, and then you can remove it if you don't need the waist belt anymore. But yeah, I'd use about a it's like a 30 35 liter pack, 40 liter pack, something like that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so if you've got an 11 or 12 pound base weight, 35 liters is going to do you just fine, right?
Yeah, because I think it's about 2.5 pounds of food per day. So a 5 day food carry is going to be, 12 and a half pounds. And then you take the 10 to 11 base weight, and then you have your water. So you're looking at about 30 pound pack.
Okay. So you conquered the East Coast, the Eastern Continental Trail, and then in 2017, you set off on the PCT.
Yeah, the year of fire and ice.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Oh man. Well, had a little trail romance on that. That one ended she threw me a right hook in Mammoth. So that's how that one went.
You know,
And
Cheswick, I'm always looking for titles of the episode as we're talking. I think a right hook in Mammoth. I mean, that might be the title up. That might be the episode title.
oh, that's perfect, dude. So anyway, that year there was more snow in the Sierras in July than these last 2 years in May. And what that forced us to do was to get in there later, which then meant that Northern California was going to be inundated with fires. And there was a big fire there, and then a big fire in Oregon. And those two fires connected and then just shot up to Washington. So I was in my tent. I had just gotten a cookie from a Jehovah's Witness and then a forest ranger knocked on my tent and said, "You got to be out of here by 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. The fire's about 15 miles behind you." And then we got stranded and stuck in Trout River for 3 days until the fire they could handle it. But yeah, that was a very tough year. I don't think many people finished.
Yeah, my son and I did the southern half of the John Muir Trail in 2017, and we did it in late July. and there was snow everywhere, and the water crossings were ridiculous. I mean, that was a big, big snow year.
Yeah, man, we probably passed each other. I was there about that same time.
Seriously, I'm gonna look back through my pictures now, see if I can find Cheswick.
There
I always go
you go.
back and I look for either I'm look for hikers that that may have crossed, or I look for Bigfoot in the background. Haven't found Bigfoot yet though. So. So, how many miles did you do on the PCT in 2017? The fires got in the way, you couldn't complete it.
I made it to Shasta, 1600 miles, 1700, something like that. And I had some friends that were up ahead that were stuck in the fires. They were able to get out and then they were able to rent a car. And so we went up to Cascade Locks. And the idea was to just go north from there and then come back down and finish the remaining section. But the fires never seemed to end that year. So some people did the Oregon Coast Trail and then claimed they did the PCT. But for me, once I break my footpath, I stop. I don't really consider it a through hike to me. So I try not
You're a
to break my
purist.
foot. Yeah,
Yeah.
I guess you'd say that.
Yeah. Now tell us about your time in the Sierras. What do you remember from those snowy days? You have any favorite spots out there?
From 2017
Yeah.
or just all three
Or
times I've been in.
in general, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love all of it because it's like walking through a Bob Ross painting. So, I mean, there, like on the loop, for example, there's a lot of beautiful spots. Absolutely. Like Glacier's beautiful and Yosemite and Yellowstone and the Wind Rivers in Wyoming. Like there's a lot of great places, but man, I don't know. There's something about the Sierras. They're just spectacular, you know, and it never gets old, ever. It's the most incredible area of hiking. That's why I don't mind doing it three times.
So you got 16 to 1700 miles in on the PCT, and then in 2021 you turn your attention to this thing called the Great Western Loop. Can you explain to us what the Great Western Loop is and how you became aware of it?
So Andrew Skurka created it when he was 26 years old, and so he started at the Grand Canyon and then he hiked west to the Pacific Crest Trail. He got to the PCT right around mile 200 and something, and then he hiked north to Canada, and then he peeled off of the Pacific Crest Trail and did the Pacific Northwest Trail east to Glacier in Montana. And then once the Pacific Northwest Trail arrives at Glacier, you get on to the Continental Divide Trail at Waterton. And from there you just follow the Continental Divide Trail south to New Mexico. And then right around, I believe it's Doc Campbell's outpost in New Mexico is where you peel off and do the Grand Enchantment Trail, which is more of a route than an actual trail. It just uses existing trails and jeep roads and ravines and canyons. And then from there you go to the Arizona Trail. And from there you go north to the Grand Canyon. Then you go into the Grand Canyon, do the Tonto Trail and the South Bass Trail out. And then you basically do road walking through the desert to where you had started the hike in the beginning. So
Okay,
it's 6,875 miles.
that's a lot. That's a lot. I'm gonna go back to a little piece of that route. You say you go to Doc Campbell's Outpost. Is that a town? Is that like a shack standing in the desert somewhere? I mean, that sounds very, very odd.
Well, I actually didn't go. The Grand Enchantment has a couple of different routes that come off of to the Continental Divide Trail. And I realized I had enough food where I didn't have to continue to go south to Doc Campbell's. But the normal route people would do would be to go down to Doc Campbell's and then go a little bit northwest and get onto the Grand Enchantment that way. But I figured I'd just start moving west sooner. So I got onto the Grand Enchantment route in a different spot. And that turned out to probably be the biggest mistake of the entire loop, man, because it was so nasty, beat up and burned and blowdowns and bushwhacking. It was absolutely insane.
But what is Doc Campbell's outpost?
Oh yeah, it's like a general store in the middle of nowhere.
So it's like walk to that building and hang a right, right? Yeah. Go
Basically,
for
yeah. Basically, yeah.
Oh,
Go to
that's
Doc
great.
Campbell's and bang a right.
So, I mean, I have here in my notes that you attempted the Great Western Loop in 2021, but you only, I put in air quotes here, you only did 4,800 miles.
Yeah, that was a bummer, man.
What happened?
I broke my foot.
Oh.
So I stood up, I stepped on a rock at like 8:30 at night, and the rock rolled on me on this slight downhill, and it just made me fall forward. And I was wearing the Ultra Olympus 4s, and it's a tall shoe. It's more like a trail runner for old people, but it made me fold my foot forward in this very unnatural way. And I hiked another 100 miles before I couldn't hike anymore and realized I'd broken my third metatarsal.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yeah.
100 miles, huh?
Yep, about 100. Yeah, it was 100 because it was before Grand Lake to Winter Park. It was right around 100 miles. It was 90, 97 point something.
Now, how many people have completed the Great Western Loop?
Well, you had Andrew Skurka in 2007, and then you had Jeff Garmeyer did it in 2018, I believe. And then you had a German last year do it counterclockwise, but he hit so many fires, he had to do a ton of road walking. So, I mean, he did a loop. I mean, I wouldn't, not sure if you'd consider it the loop. My buddy Fish did it last year. I met him. But he cut out the Grand Enchantment section. And then there was another guy, I can't remember his name, but not sure if he did it completely. And then me. So what's that, four or five people?
Four or five people, depending on the German and your interpretation of a loop or the loop.
Right.
Now, are you familiar with, Jeff Garmeyer is a friend of the podcast here. He's been on at least 5 times. He just co-hosted with me an episode where we talked to the four completers of the calendar year Triple Crown from last year. That was a lot of fun. And he tells a great story from his time on the Great Western Loop. Have you heard this story about the antlers?
No.
So he's walking southbound. I'm not sure which part of the trail he's on, but he's walking southbound. I'm not sure if it's close to Doc Campbell's outpost or not, but he's close to some town, and he's kind of in the bush, and off to the side of the trail he sees this set of antlers, and he says, "Wow, look at that! Some moose antlers that just shed. They're right there. I'm close to town. I'm going to take those antlers, carry them with me to the town, and I'm going to mail them to my house. I'm going to ship them to my house." So he reaches over there and grabs onto the antlers, and they are still attached to a live bull moose, which he then has to proceed to hide behind trees and dance around for a while until the moose forgets about him.
That's great.
Typical Jeff Garmeyer story right there. Now, Cheswick, are you familiar with Type 2 fun?
Yeah, for sure. Are you familiar with Type 3 fun?
Let's hear some Type 3 fun.
Well, one, so because I banged a right earlier than Doc Campbell's, I got into some shenanigans on the, what was it called? The something Apache Trail. It was raining, it was hailing. I had dropped all my cigarettes on the ground, so I didn't have any of those left. And it had been raining for like 2 days up to that point. So I knew I was going to be getting hypothermia. So I was able to finally start a fire, but it's the only fire I've ever started on trail. Like I don't start them because I don't want to deal with it, you know. But it was the only time I'd ever started a fire so I wouldn't freeze to death. Yeah, that wasn't a good spot. After 6,000 miles, you kind of want to avoid dealing with those situations. That one was hard.
All right. And so you broke your foot in 2021, unable to complete after 4,800 miles. And you go back. This trail is not going to conquer you. You're going to conquer it. You go back in 2022, just this past year. When did you start in 2022 on the Great Western Loop?
I started both of them on April 19th from Nothing, Arizona. So I just started exactly a year later to do the whole thing over again.
Nothing, Arizona. Is that just a stone throw's away from Doc Campbell's outpost?
No, it's near Wiki Up. Man. There's nothing, there's literally nothing there but just like a dilapidated old building and just a sign that kind of says nothing. It's missing a couple letters, but yeah, that's it.
Is there a significance in your life to the date, April 19th?
No, so Garmeyer started from Blythe, Arizona on April, or Blythe, California, which is on the border of Arizona, on April 29th. Skirka started from the Grand Canyon on April 9th. So I figured I'd just start in between those two guys on April 19th.
Got it. And so you start on April 19th in 2022, and what was your completion date?
November 3rd at 5:30 at night.
Okay, so just under 7 months then to do the 68
Yeah,
68, 75.
197 days and 11 hours.
Very precise, 11 hours.
And 5 minutes.
And what how many zeros did you take on that hike?
Well, me and this kid Sloppy Joe had a 16-mile out and back because he fell 80 feet up in Snoqualmie after the Kendall Catwalk. So once he hit that boulder, which if he didn't hit it, he would have been killed, we decided to turn around and just go back to the motel. So, I mean, I guess you can call that a zero because you don't count the 16-mile out back. And then met a girl in Mojave. So I went over to Mojave, or I think that was what it was called. I think, yeah, near Walker Pass, I got off trail, but I still had to hike a mile to get to Walker Pass. So, like actual zeros without any hiking at all, I didn't have one.
Wow. In 7
Yeah.
months, 11 days, and no, 7 months. How many
Six and a
days?
half months,
Six and a half months.
197 days.
That's right. There you go. 197 days, 11 hours, 5 minutes. That's the
Yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And so what was your average? What was your average mileage per day?
34.8, 34.8,
And what was your high mileage day?
50.5.
50.5. And was that a challenge for you? I mean, did you say, I'm gonna see how many miles I can hike today, or it just worked out that way?
No, when you're doing 50s, those kind of have to be planned because a lot of things have to fall into place to be able to pull it off. You know, the terrain has to be fairly easy. You know, your pack can't be too heavy with, you know, 4, 5, 6 days of food. So you got to be having like down to 2 to 1 day of food. So your pack's light. You're going to have to go late. You got to limit your breaks. So I think to pull those off, I'd always have to be on the trail at 4:35 in the morning because I've got to have as close to 20 miles by noon. Because if I can get 20 miles by noon, then I can do another 30 miles by 10, 11 o'clock at night if I stay on a 3 mile per day av or a 3 mile per hour average.
Got it. And was there ever a point that you were out there and you thought, this is not going to happen? I just can't do it anymore. What was I thinking?
A 50-mile day or the hike?
Just the hike in general. Do you ever find yourself in a position where you were at the lowest of lows and saying, what am I doing?
Yeah, that hypothermic situation when I started the fire. Because at that point, it had been on the trail for 169 days, and I didn't really have much in the tank, but I also had done 142 days the year before. So I had been on the trail for, 18, 12 months in 18 months. So I was burnt out because I felt like I was had done, two hikes. So 12,000 miles in 18 months, that was tough. I was pretty fried by the end.
Now, even though you're only the fourth or fifth person to do the Great Western Loop, those trails that make up the Great Western Loop, they probably have a fair amount of traffic on them, depending on the time of the year. Did you find yourself hiking with a partner or a tramily at all, or are you pretty much a
No,
solo hiker?
I mean, to do the loop, you don't have a tramway.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And really, it's hard enough just to have one person you're hiking with. Because I hiked with a kid for 1,000 miles, 22-year-old kid. He was a great runner. He's a great athlete. But even that way, we still had different hiking styles. I mean, he was 22, so I learned a lot about, more efficiency as far as logistics and electronics. And then I asked him what he learned from me, and he said sleep deprivation. Because that's how you do the loop, at least how I did it, was I would only sleep 5 hours a night. And if I could get 5 hours a night, then I was okay. But anything less than that, it was tough.
How are your route finding skills?
Well, I mean, like the PCT is easy that way, and the
Yeah.
PNT is pretty well marked as well, and the CDT and the Arizona Trail, those. And then on the CDT, you get on the Colorado Trail, so that one's well marked and well defined and well maintained too. But now that people have Gaia, and you've got gut hooks, it's really taken the difficulty out of route finding, and I think that's a one main reason why so many people are getting into thru hiking now, is because you have a phone with a map that tells you water sources and trail angels and comments and rides and all of that. So, but if people had to use a map and compass, don't think we'd have so many people out there.
Yeah, are you a map and compass kind of guy? Could you get by with a map and compass?
I mean, push comes to shove, life or death, yeah. But
Okay.
I don't ever really. I keep a compass with me just in
All right.
case.
All right. Well, I've got a suggestion for you. I mean, if you're good at sleep deprivation and you can get by with a map and a compass, I think the next challenge for you, and if you take me up on this, I have to be one of your crew to do this. So we're talking the Barkley Marathons.
The Barclay. That's right.
What do you think? You got this.
I don't know, man. Did you see all those brambles? I might be
Yes.
all set.
Rat jaw. I mean, your legs come out different after you go through rat jaw.
Whew. Yeah, I'll think about it. I gotta get a license plate to send.
That's right. That's right. Any race that's been in existence for 30 plus years and only has 15 finishers, I mean, that tells you something.
That thing's pretty aggressive.
That is pretty aggressive. Coming from the guy who completed the Great Western Loop in 2022. All right. Hey, Cheswick, what's next for Cheswick? What's the next big adventure?
I think I'm gonna do the Hey Duke Trail in the fall. And I'm not gonna have a time. Just gonna walk as many miles in a day. And if I'm content with, 15 miles in a day, I'll just pitch my tent and there you go. 'Cause doing the loop and trying to go under 200 days when I got on the Grand Enchantment, which was really tough section, it's hard to try and sustain the pace. So if you're doing a difficult route like the Grand Enchantment or like the Hey Duke, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if I didn't wasn't trying to force, 30 plus miles every single day.
Cheswick, I apologize if I did not recognize that your 197 is that an FKT on the Great Western Loop?
Well, there's no such thing of an FKT because there's so many different routes you can do. So basically, it's just You want to do a loop. You want to finish where you started, and you want to do 6,850 plus miles. So I guess it's just I did it in 197 days. But then, like, Skirka created it. This was before Gut Hooks. So he had to use map and compass and a GPS. And then nobody replicated it and was able to do it again until Garmeyer did it 10 years later. So the trails are always changing, different routes and different distances. So it's never going to be a fastest known time. It's just I happened to do it in this amount of days, and Skirka, when he did it in this amount of days, and Garmeyer did it in those amount of days.
Okay, so has anybody done some version? I'm gonna ask this a different way. Has anybody done some version of the Great Western Loop faster than 197 days?
No,
Okay,
not that
all right.
I know of.
Then we'll leave it right there. That is the unofficial, according to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, the unofficial FKT of the Great Western Loop.
There you
And
go.
so the next adventure, the Hayduke. Are you gonna do
Yeah.
any research before the Hayduke?
That one probably. Yeah. But if I go with somebody else, I'll let them do all the research. There's one food cache I know that you need to do. And then the Moab, what is it? The Moab 240, Moab 250,
240.
240. Yeah, that's part of the route. So I figured I'd go in there and hiker trash some, electrolytes and some food at some of these tents. So that's kind of why I'm timing it that way.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you want to do some easy research and just put in some headphones and listen, we've got an episode with Ginger Balls, who did the Hey Duke. We have a title episode devoted to the Hey Duke. And then I've got an upcoming episode with Constantine, who did the Hey Duke. I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it yet, but we're going to talk about the Hey Duke. So there's a couple episodes for you.
Ginger balls. That's
Ginger
great.
Balls. Yeah. Ginger Balls is he's a great story, man. He's a triple crowner. He is retired Navy. He was a lieutenant commander when he retired, and he got into his head that he wanted to hike the AT. And so he retired, sold everything, got his gear, and showed up at the AT with like 65 pounds on his back. And he ran into a 22-year-old kid there at Springer Mountain who had like 13 pounds. And this is the funniest thing. Little did Ginger Balls know, but that was Scrapbook, and Scrapbook was finishing. The AT was his third long trail. So he was becoming a triple crowner. This was Ginger Balls' first long trail. And they both looked at each other and thought to themselves, this guy's never going to make it. So I think that's a hilarious moment. And I've had both of them on the podcast. They're really funny to talk to. But Ginger Ball is one of the great names. I'd also say that No One, that's a great name. I've got another guy I talked to whose name was Long Story. And so you'd ask him, hey, what's your trail name out there? And he'd say, well, Long Story. And you'd wait. Oh, that's it. The name is Long Story. Got it. Okay.
That's good. That's real good.
All right. Hey, do you have an anticipated start date on the Hey Duke?
No, I gotta see how my knee's gonna hold up because I just had knee surgery when I finished on November 3rd. I had knee surgery on November 9th. And now I gotta have my left knee taken care of in April. So I'll see how I go throughout the summer.
What was the extent of the knee damage? Was did you have to have it scoped out, or was it something more serious?
Yeah, I had I had two torn meniscus before I did the loop this year. So I already knew that going into it. So I just had my doctor just do double cortisone shots in each knee. And the goal was to see if it was gonna last for most of the hike. And it did. It ended up being over 5 months. And my quads were strong enough by that time that it was supporting it. But yeah, so I had two. I had well, this is the crazy thing. So I had meniscus was partially torn. Then I had ligament damage on the right, and then I had some arthritis underneath the kneecap. So they took care of all that. But they said they couldn't believe that my meniscus didn't tear anymore on this attempt. So they couldn't believe I did 7,000 miles and didn't make that worse.
Wow.
But
Question
I
number
made everything
eight.
else worse.
Question number eight on the hiking pole. What is more impressive, walking 100 miles on a broken foot or hiking 6875 on two bad knees?
Oh, 6875 with two bad knees, man.
Would have to be, for right? Sure.
Yeah. It has to be. It's because it's so long.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Cheswick, you know where we are?
Well, I'm guessing you're on the West Coast.
I am. I am on the West Coast. But do you know where we are in the episode?
Oh, no.
All right.
The pro tip insight of the week.
That's right, Half Calf. It's time for Cheswick to share with us some trail wisdom to make our next outdoor experience even better. What wisdom can you share with us, Cheswick?
Well, I think anyone that wants to do these kind of hikes, you just got to be used to being tired, hungry, sore, and dirty for as long as the thing takes. And, you know, if you can be that way, then you can do any of these things. But you just got to be used to not taking a shower every 2 days and sleeping on the ground and eating ramen noodles and eating oatmeal and being dirty all the time. If you can exist in that world, yeah, anyone can accomplish these through hikes.
And can you extrapolate any of those skills and apply them to civilized life?
No.
Best answer all night. Fantastic. All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Cheswick. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Cheswick, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media? Where can they find updates on your latest adventures?
Oh, just CheswickTreks.com. I have a website. I don't do a lot of Instagram or Facebook posts. So any of my stuff is usually just on the website.
Okay. Remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. No TikTok for you yet, Cheswick?
No.
Yeah. Ginger Balls told me that TikTok's for 16-year-old girls. So, and if you have comments or clips you want to share with me, you can send it to me at johnfreakymuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Cheswick, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some kind of adventure media to help our listeners stay connected to the trail. You have anything you could recommend to us in terms of a documentary or a book or anything like that?
Dude, I watched The Alpinist a couple weeks ago. And that Marc-Andre LeClaire, like, that's at such a high level. It's absolutely insane. So if you're going to watch a documentary, that's the one I'd recommend.
That is an excellent, excellent choice. Yes, that, like you said, high level. We're not going to give away the ending, but it is a very, very good movie.
It's insane.
Yep. I shouldn't say movie. A good documentary. It's not fictionalized. It's all actually true.
Dude, my palms were sweating.
Oh, what's that? Say that again.
My palms were sweating watching the opening scene of that.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't imagine trying to film that and not knowing what's going to happen every step, every swing of the axe. And, oh.
Yep. Yikes. Insane. High stakes, high drama. Mm. All right. And
what have we not asked you?
Before we wrap things up, just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What do we miss tonight?
Well, I do an Injinji five-toed liner sock and then a darn tough lightweight sock. And that seems to help prevent blisters. So the double sock combination. That was one thing. Nashville Pack, Taco Comfort Solutions, darn tough socks, and Eastern Mountain Sports. And Dallas Ransom Cobb at Ransom Multimedia. So those are the people that have helped me out tremendously on these hikes, and probably wouldn't be able to do them without those people and all that help. So I just want to shout out to them.
All right. Well, hey, you beat me to our last segment here. That's a wrap from the John Freaking Muir Studio. Any other shout outs to friends and family, Cheswick?
No, I'm good. No, my family, my friends. Yeah, it's, okay. it's It's important to have the support. Even if people don't understand what you're doing out there, it's still nice to have them support you regardless.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. Doesn't care if you want to go downhill. Doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you missed that right turn at Doc Campbell's Outpost and you had to duck a right hook in Mammoth. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.